Your Locked On Canadiens, your daily podcast on the Montreal Canadiens. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to episode 427. Of Locked On Canadiens. Today's episode is brought to you by Spotify Green Room. Spotify is changing the way we talk sports. My name is Laura Seb, also known as the Active Stick, and I'm joined as always by Scott Matla of Habs Eyes on the Prize. Pretty grateful right now that we waited a little bit longer to do our mailbag recording because the Canadiens have some news to report, do they not?
Yes. Also, part of the delay was I was stuck in the Burger King drive-thru. So we're being fully honest here.
You know what? It allowed the Canadiens to announce a signing. That's pretty good.
Yeah. I there was a rumor going around Twitter from an unverified source. And so I'm like, I'm going to drive home and I'm going to start working on this. The Canadiens have signed Matthew Perreault 1 year, $950,000. Same as they gave Cedric Paquette. Got to be honest. I don't really see a downside here. I'm going to have an article up on Eyes on the Prize shortly after we're done recording this episode. But Perreault, a bottom six winger, it says he's a center. He hasn't played center in a couple of years. He's from the area, he's from Drummondville. Jets fans are beside themselves, which is always a good sign for when a player leaves a team, is that how heartbroken is the fan base? And I got to be honest, with the loss of Corey Perry today going to Tampa Bay, this is a nice replacement move there. He brings the same level of offense on the ice. I don't quite know what his role was in terms of leadership in Winnipeg, but on the ice here, the Canadiens found a pretty ready-made replacement for their bottom six, fourth line already without really having to try too hard.
Yes, that is correct. We're going to talk a little bit about Corey Perry later because there's some mailbag questions to do with him. I think with the Perreault signing, I think this is a great move for the Canadiens. And as our friend Kara T of Arctic Ice Hockey said, if he manages to stay healthy for even half the year, that contract is a bargain. We do know that he's got some injury issues. However, I think that it is a great signing. And this is the thing, like every single move the Canadians have made so far have been good value for what they are. And we're going to talk next week a little bit about what happens to the team if they aren't able to land a major puck moving defenseman or a major center through free trade at this point, through a trade at this point, because free agency didn't work out for them. We'll talk about all of that next week. And a quick note, we're going down to 3 days a week for August, and we expect to continue that until the last week of September or possibly the first week of October. They haven't confirmed yet, but we're going to be 3 days a week and we're going to have some fun interviews and we're going to talk about whatever happens, obviously, in Canadiens land. And we're going to start with talking about next year, and that's going to happen all next week. So today, let us move really quickly to the mailbag, as is tradition. I'm going to start really quickly with the questions that we got over email. One of them is from longtime listener Pierre L. And on the Wednesday episode, which those of you who listen to us on Apple, for whatever reason, it literally did not show up on Apple, no matter how many times I tried to push publish. It's been something that's been experienced by a lot of our fellow Locked On Podcast Network hosts. For whatever reason, Apple sometimes screws us over and just literally doesn't download the episode. Sometimes there's a delay. So if you didn't find Wednesday's episode on Apple, it is available on all the other platforms like Overcast, Spotify. You can go to the Megaphone, just search Locked On Canadiens and listen to us on Stitcher or Google, anywhere you want. So if you missed that, on Wednesday, we were talking about Canadian sponsors, and I brought up, you know, for those of you who don't know what Saint-Hubert is, there's a big debate in Canada, whether it's Swiss Chalet or Saint-Hubert, and I said, and the answer is neither, and then we didn't elaborate because we were getting into, obviously a heavier topic, so Pierre reached out and said, it's not Saint-Hubert or Swiss Chalet, it is Côte Saint-Luc Barbecue. Please discuss. And that is absolutely true. I know of many prominent Montrealers that would agree with me. Côte Saint-Luc Barbecue is where it's at. If you're looking for like a rotisserie chicken kind of thing, don't bother with the others. That's the one. Scott, did we take you to Côte Saint-Luc Barbecue when you were here last time, or are we going to have to do that when you visit us next?
I've never been to Côte Saint-Luc. When the last time I was in Montreal, Mimeso's was closed when Mark and I went to go get subs, and he was very distraught by this. We went to some shady dep to buy Una Brew because we drank all of it at his apartment. We went to Mapulet, obviously, with Andrew, Mark, and we bumped into, I believe it was Sean Gordon, who was there with his son after hockey practice, which was just a hell of a meeting. And then myself, I met you at Schwartz's for the introductory smoked meat. So I have not been to Côte Saint-Luc, Saint-Hubert, Chalet, any of those in Montreal or Quebec in general.
So we will take you to Côte Saint-Luc Barbecue because that is the must, that is the staple. And as Pierre says, and I agree, yes, that is the one. That's the answer to this debate, is it's neither. So I just want to quickly say as well, we do have to move to more important things, but I am preparing a giant Google Doc because the draft is going to be in Montreal next year. So those of you who are in Montreal and want to share recommendations with me so that I can add them to the giant Google Doc of activities in Montreal, restaurants, bars, cafes, whatever you recommend, let me know. And I will make a sheet on the Google Doc that is listener recommendations. You can tweet us at @LO_Canadians. And you can also email us at LockedOnCanadians@gmail.com. And I'm very looking forward to hearing what you guys have to recommend to anybody who might be visiting out of town, from out of town, for the draft next summer. All right. So we are going to get into some more important hockey related topics, and that's going to happen in just one quick moment. So we've got one more email question, and it is from a longtime listener, our friend Georg, who is in Austria, and we want to say hi. And he said, obviously, said some really, really nice things. And we've been so grateful to our listeners for the last few days. You know, we've been under, Scott has been getting it obviously a lot more than I have because he wrote a piece on Eyes in the Prize. So we've been getting a lot of negative commentary from all sides about our stance on Logan Mailloux. And so, you know, people who reach out to us and tell us that they appreciate listening to us, even if you don't agree with us, like respectful responses, we enjoy that. We love to know that you're listening and you're thinking about what we're saying, even if we don't come out on the same side on, you know, whether Shea Weber plays too many minutes, or, you know, whether Carey Price is finished, or whatever it is. And so I just want to say thank you to Georg. So here is Georg's email. Here's my question. I felt just as disgusted by the Logan Mailloux pick as you, and thank God most of the fan base and media, as far as I can tell. And as you said, not because people don't deserve second chances, they definitely do, but I think they should be earned. How about finding a way to apologize that makes the victim forgive you and maybe even be okay with you being in the draft, for example? But what would you suggest we as fans do? Turning our back on the Canadians feels a bit too easy. Being a fan for me means you stick with your team even during bad times, or have they overdone it? Not purchasing any merchandise feels like a start. Speaking out as well, but is there any real strong way to get them to, for example, renounce the pick? P.S. not going to the games isn't really going to affect anyone as I live in Vienna, Austria. So I think that he brings up a couple of important things. And we said we were going to discuss Jeff Molson's statement in today's episode because of this. I said, you know, there was a really good point that the that one of our listeners made. And Georg, I think that it's true that if you are a fan, it's not necessarily about sticking with them through the good times and the bad. It is holding them accountable because you want them to be the best version of themselves. Like, the reason that we are disappointed in the Canadians is because they did a thing that we don't think reflects us as people. We don't think that it contributes to society in a positive way. And if you think about it, it's very much like, you know, when people say, oh, you can't criticize the country you live in because go move elsewhere. I don't think that's true. I think loving something, I think being patriotic, you have to want the best. You have to want your country to change for the best, for example. And I think that this goes for our commercial interests as well. Like, as consumers, if there's something that we're loyal to, we would want them to be socially responsible. We would want them to have good values. And I think that that's really, really important. And I think that what ended up happening, and we're going to talk about the extent of this in just one second, but what ended up happening, and I think this is really, really effective, is putting pressure on sponsors. And the sponsors will listen if you're vocal. And it's not necessarily, you don't have to say something like, oh, Saint Hubert, you sponsor the Canadians, I'm never eating chicken there at all. Or Desjardins, I'm removing all my money and I'm going to another bank or something like that. It doesn't necessarily have to be that way. You can challenge something that you're loyal to, and you can say, and I think this is what ended up happening with fans and media, is people are like, hey, chicken place, hey, bank, are you okay with what the Canadians did? And when they know that consumers are thinking about it and it could affect their bottom line, then they will put pressure on the Canadians. We, yes, absolutely say, I'm not going to buy any more merch. I'm going to cancel my subscription or whatever it is that, you know, I'm not going to spend money on this team. This team is not going to make any money off of me. I think that's a great start. But at the same time, I think sponsors have a big role to play as well. And if you just think about it, you know, anytime a high profile person on television says something that is extremely irresponsible, bigoted, or something like that, you know, people will start putting pressure on the advertisers. They'll start putting pressure on the sponsors and they'll say, this is what you're paying for. Do you want to do it? And time again, people have canceled contracts, like companies have canceled contracts because they don't want to be associated with something that negative. So I think that the fact that Jeff Molson came out and made the statement, and let's talk about that, the merits of that real quick right now, Scott. The fact that that happened is because a lot of people said to the sponsors, are you okay with what's happening, with what you're paying for and what you're attaching your name to? And I think that that is so effective. So yeah, so as fans, we should, if we love the team, if you want to turn your back on the team, you are perfectly 100%, you know, that's a valid choice, because I know that they betrayed a lot of people, like people who survived something like this, or women, or if you want to turn your back, that's fine. Like, that is a valid choice. We're not here to tell you don't do it. But if you love the team and you want to stick around, I think that you can and should demand better from them. And putting pressure on them financially or their sponsors is a really, really good way to do it. All right, Scott, real quick, we were going to talk about the Jeff Molson statement, and we had a couple of thoughts about that. Do you want to quickly tell me what your initial reaction to it was?
My first thought is, one, don't call them a good person or a good kid when they did something heinous to somebody else. This statement was better than their initial attempts, but it's still missing the point where they did mention the victim and, you know, how this might have affected them. But it's still very PR-y and doesn't hit what we're looking for in this. It feels like they're saying something to say something, not because they're formulating the right thought there. And a lot of it, I think, came from, like you said, the pressure from the sponsors, who afterwards said, we are happy with this statement and et cetera with that. And so I don't think we're going to see much more out of that, which feels wrong because the pressure needs to be kept on the Canadians in this. They mentioned the programming, the steps they're going through with him. He's not being invited to development camp, to rookie camp. They want him to stay in doing all this. But at the same time, that's all well and good, but it doesn't fix the problem at the core here, is that he still did something wrong to somebody else. And a lot of this seems to be ignoring that, which is the biggest thing at the heart of the issue here, is that the Canadians don't seem to want to acknowledge and admit that this isn't about Logan. It's what he did to somebody else and how it impacted them. This whole thing should not be centered around how his life is being impacted. That's not the point right now. There's someone else whose life was impacted far worse immediately, that they should be focused on helping out and helping them and doing what they need to. And not just them, everyone else who might've been going through this, instead of someone who still got to be a first round NHL draft pick and is still going to get to play hockey and do all this other stuff right now.
Right. And so I'm going to say real quick before we move on, I was having a conversation with somebody, and I shall leave them nameless unless they want to, they want me to credit them with this, is that, you know, we're noticing a lot of people are more angry with the Canadians than we are with Logan Mailloux. And we don't necessarily think that that's wrong at this stage, because the thing is, he did the wrong thing. He's going to have to take the steps, and it's up to the fans and the victim whether or not they believe that he's remorseful enough for, like, in terms of the victim. Obviously she needs to be satisfied with the steps that he's taking, and you know, it's more about her than it is about us. But for us as fans, like he said, you know, I hope the fans will learn to accept me and things like that. Your mileage is going to vary. For some people, it's never going to be enough. And for some people, they've already forgiven him, which I do not understand. But the problem and the reason that a lot of people are more angry with the Canadians is that the mentality that led to drafting him in the first place exists. So, and that was what I found unsatisfying about Jeff Molson's statement. I think it's fine to make him earn his chance to get to development camp and training camp. I think it's fine to ask him to take steps. I think it's fine to come up with a plan, to have your, you know, your community outreach person work with him. I think all those things are fine. And again, like I said, everybody's going to have a different reaction to it. For some people, it's going to be enough. For some people, it's not. It doesn't really matter as long as the victim is satisfied. But at the end of the day, the Canadians looked at what he did not anticipate the backlash, and drafted him anyway, and they were surprised by the backlash. So to me, the mentality that is the problem is where you can do something like this and it doesn't matter because you're good at hockey. I think that, and a lot of people are saying, you know, people have done worse things. There are so many worse people in the league. Like, why are we focusing on this one guy? And it's truly because, like, in the past, this kind of thing would be ignored, swept under the rug, and your career would not be affected. And this is really the first time that so much backlash has actually been voiced. And I think that that's a positive thing. I don't think that's a negative thing. I think, you know, if you're not okay with this, and if the Canadians saw how angry people were with somebody who committed this act, then, you know, when people say, oh, this other guy did worse, well, next time other teams are going to think twice about the other guy who did worse. You know, I think that this is the thing that we want isn't for Logan Mailloux to never play again or go to jail or whatever. He did whatever the law stated that he had to do. He did that part. And, you know, he, at this point, he has to live with his actions and he has to become a better person. And the Canadians kind of gave him that free pass. But the problem that we have with Jeff Molson's statement and the, you know, people are like, it's never going to be enough. No, it will be enough when the mentality changes, when the way that you treat your fellow human beings is more important than whether or not you get to play hockey. It's the same thing with Tony DeAngelo signing with the Canes. He attacked players viciously with racial slurs in the OHL. So, you know, at some point, teams looked at this guy. They're like, well, he has said this thing and harmed this person, and we're still going to draft him, trade for him, sign him. The problem is not necessarily just that person. That, yes, that person needs to become a better person. The problem is that you're saying that even if you're a if you're a bad, quote unquote, bad person, if you're a person that does these bad things, the problem is that teams think that it's still okay to sign you or draft you or trade for you, and they're defending that position. Like, you should really not get so many chances if you do things like that. And that's the problem that we have, is that, you know, they're sitting in the draft table and they're like, this guy did this thing and he's still on our board. And that's the problem. So I'm going to move on because we have so many mailbag questions about a lot of things. And I really do hope that we get to not talk about this as often, because I don't want it swept under the rug. I do think people need to keep the pressure up so that things do change in this league. And as fans, it is our responsibility. People who keep telling me to stop talking about it, if I stop talking about it, the Canadians think it's fine to do this again. And it's, I don't mean just me. I mean, all of us as a group. So I think we should keep the pressure up. But for, in terms of like this podcast, like, we would really like to move on from how disappointing the Canadians have been. I think we would like to say some positive things. I think we would like to see some positive concrete actions that we can actually feel good about and feel good talking about. But we have fun questions, I promise. And we're going to do our rapid fire. And that's coming up in just one moment. This episode is brought to you by Built Bar. As you know, all of our on the Lockdown Podcast Network are fueled by Built Bar, which is a protein bar that tastes like a candy bar. It's covered with real chocolate. It's got 18 delicious flavors. Plus, occasionally you get some special edition, delicious flavors that come up and they're gone in a snap. So you really need to keep an eye on Built Bar to see what they are. They are low in calorie, high in protein, and low in sugar. They're really, really delicious, soft and easy to chew. And as I said, high in protein. If you need that energy, you need that Built Bar. And if you want to try Built Bar, you can enter the promo code LOCKED15 at built.com and get 15% off your order. That's LOCKED15 if you go to built.com, and you'll get 15% off your order. All right, Scott, let's see how fast we can answer the like millions of questions we got on Twitter.
I was going to say, we did get a lot of them, and we're going to start with a pair from Cole. With Dano gone now, who takes the number one line spot?
It's going to be Nick Suzuki. He doesn't have a choice. They're going to have to come up with a checking line or something, because it's like, I don't think that there's any other choice for that right now.
And another one from Cole. Do you think having Anderson on the team had a small part in the acquisition of David Savard?
He said that he wanted to come here anyway because of his family, but I do think that, you know, the fact that they know each other and they play together is going to help the transition.
From our friend Jim at Hockey in Ottawa, I wanted to thank you guys for your coverage. I know it hasn't been easy, and you've done well giving the issues the appropriate gravity. That said, assuming there have been no signings or trades, which, sorry, friend, what center do you think the Habs add?
I think it's going to come from within. It's either going to be Jake Evans steps up, Ryan Poehling makes the team, unless they trade. But the thing is, like, who would you want to trade for at this point? Which center is available and you would want to trade for? Apparently the Canadians are out on Jack Eichel because they lowballed the Buffalo Sabres. So I don't see anybody. What about you, Scott?
I still think it's Jack Eichel. Whether the Sabres say they were lowballed or not, the Sabres have backed themselves into a corner with this. The Canadians have the pieces to get it done, whether they think about whether the Sabres think so or not. I think Jack Eichel is the piece the Canadians are going for, and they might shock someone with how solid that trade might end up being. From Paul Brinshow, do you think Corey Perry will get a reverse Pat Maroon and lose in the finals 3 years in a row?
I think it's going to be the opposite. I think it's going to be the Pat Maroon is going to overpower, and I'm going to be happy for Corey Perry. I'm bummed he's gone. I understand why he is. And I'm going to be happy if he gets to lift the Stanley Cup again. And I can't believe I'm saying this. I hated Corey Perry so much for so long, but I wish him the best. And I'm glad for what he brought to Montreal.
It is absolutely shocking that both you and I saw that he signed with Tampa and immediately went, no.
Imagine.
Like, 2021 is the weirdest year ever. So from Brian Baston, how do you think Montreal will handle Shea's injury, and how receptive would they be to the idea of working with Nashville with regards to the cap recapture penalty?
All right. So I do think that they are, based on previous reporting by Elliot Friedman, they are trying to get him on LTIR, and the league still has to get information from the doctors or whatever in order to approve the LTIR. I don't think that anybody wants Shea to retire. And, you know, the general consensus is that the league will eventually approve this, but in case they do not, that's going to be a huge problem. And the Canadians are in the driver's seat, and they can put a lot of pressure on the Nashville Predators.
Yeah, I think something will come from that. The Canadians need immediate cap space if they want to do anything with signing people to get a center down the middle and everything else. So I wouldn't be shocked if he goes back to Nashville and the Canadians' return is one of those nothing trades. They get cap space back. It wouldn't shock me in the slightest. From our friend Ian, what stadium snack are you most looking forward to eating again, and which one do you hope never returns?
I'm going to say that it is the Bell Center hot dog, and I know that it's a bit polarizing. I thought they were universally beloved, but some people think they're overrated, and those people are all wrong. The one that I hope never comes back, honestly, I don't care, except the popcorn is often stale, so I would rather they don't have overpriced stale popcorn.
I've never had a Bell Center hot dog, so I feel like I'm missing out on that. So I'm going to go with that. I could honestly just go for a cold beer. I know that like Molson and Molson Export is like pretty garbage, low tier beer, but like there's something about having a crappy beer and watching a hockey game with your friends that like I'm super missing out on right now. So
yes, the $21 crappy beer.
I don't want to talk about it. Oh God. I paid $12.50 for a can of Blue Light at a Sabres game and regretted every second of it.
That seems so cheap to me. I'm here in Montreal.
Remember, that's $12.50 American. So
still you're coming out with a bargain on that one.
From Blaine, it's a two-part question. Is Laura relieved she can go back to now hating Perry with every fiber of her being? And was it physically painful to cheer for the worm?
Yes. Okay. So it was over the course of the season, it was hard. Like, he kept proving us wrong. We were determined to hate him, and it was getting harder and harder. I kept trying to not say nice things about him because I didn't want to be wrong, and I was turning purple. Eventually I will go back to hating him. I think when I go back to hating him is going to be as soon as he plays against Montreal.
Speaking of that, the follow-up from Corey Perry Worm, have you circled 12-7 on your calendar?
You know what? I will do it now just for you, Corey Perry Worm. We've had a very fun relationship over the course of the season, and I'm really sorry that if you no longer listen to us, because I was a big fan of our interactions.
Bandana Guy wants to know, what is your favorite Canadian Summer Olympic memory?
So I think this was London, if I'm not mistaken, it was a gold medal winning wrestler, female wrestler, who won Canada's first Olympic gold, and it was the culmination of a lot of money that had been poured into the Summer Olympic team, because historically, Canada didn't medal a lot at the Summer Olympics. And then when we got Vancouver 2010, a lot of money and a lot of sponsorships and support was pumped into athletes trying to do this for a living. And Summer Olympians were also beneficiaries of that. So I think to me, that was a really good, like that London Olympics, when people, like when there were a lot of summer medals like coming in, we didn't have to wait until the second week for like three medals or something like that. That was a really important moment. I think that was a really fun moment for me. Sorry, Scott, I know you might not have a favorite Canadian Summer Olympic memory.
My favorite Canadian Summer Olympic memories are when they lose to the United States and things. So that is, I realize I'm copping out on this, but like, I honestly don't get a chance to watch a ton of the Summer Olympics because of the way work and everything is. Even this year with hockey, I have, and everything else, like I might have watched 30 minutes worth of the Olympics so far this year. Our next question comes from Andy @_rallycap, who is a phenomenal person for all our Blue Jays fans out there, our Raptors fans out there. If you're not following him, you're really missing out. Is there another Perry-like vet you'd like to see on the team?
I thought about it, and I went and looked at all the UFAs and veterans, and I couldn't really think of anybody. What about you, Scott?
Well, Matthew Perreault was actually someone who I kind of looked at on my list, and it worked out pretty well. I've liked him as a trade piece from Winnipeg for the past couple of years because he's been a bottom six, second wave power play guy. I think he's a really good fit for what this team is looking for right now.
I have to correct myself, Scott. It was Christine Girard in a weightlifting, not wrestling, for that gold medal. But I do remember it happened pretty early and we were all excited about it. Sorry. Next question.
From Stephen or Stefan. I'm sorry if I'm getting this wrong. Do you think we have a big hole at center and our next priority next year should be to draft centers again? We've lost NO, Stahl, and Domi in the past couple years.
I think that, yes, there is a big hole at center. I do think that they need to develop some more in the pipeline. I think that it's not the end of the world, and we're going to talk about that for next week in one of our next week episodes. I think that the Canadians should look to increasing their center depth in the coming years is my answer.
This next one comes from Jeff, and I'll take this one. Is Josh Brook ready to play on the team? Not quite yet, but I would not be surprised based on the progress he made this past year if he is knocking on the door as one of the first call-ups from Lavelle this year.
I just want to say that I knew you were going to say that.
From Jen @LadyJenPool, who also runs the NHL History Girl account, one of our favorite people. Who on the team is most likely to wear a Pokemon onesie?
Yoel Armia.
I'm going to say it's either Caulfield or Brendan Gallagher, but I can understand the Yoel Armia thought there.
He doesn't take himself too seriously, right? Like, he seems like a guy who's like, he's pretty chill.
Yeah, he, and it's just funny because he's massive, but he's also like, here's my Pikachu onesie kind of thing.
Exactly.
We have a trio of questions from Randy Hansen. Who is your Olympic hero right now?
Oh, it's Simone Biles for sure. Obviously, a lot of people are criticizing her. And to that, I say, what is wrong with you? She removed herself from contention in an event because she wasn't scoring very well. And she wanted her team to medal. And she was worried about letting them down. And she was having a mental block. And I think that she absolutely did the right thing. And she showed that you can prioritize your health and you should prioritize your health. And just because you're an athlete competing on the world stage, you don't owe anybody anything. And her fellow gymnasts, because she got low scores in whatever she was competing in before she removed herself and her team was able to medal. And a lot of experts are agreeing that they probably would not have if she hadn't done that. So I think that she's a hero.
I'm going to echo everything Laura just said. Simone Biles is a champion both on and off her competition surface in so many different ways. Also from Randy, what does your mom make better than anybody else?
So everything, but if you're looking for particular dishes that I won't eat unless my mom makes it. And this is true. I literally will not eat it unless my mom makes it, except for one of my aunts. And that is, one is tabbouleh. I literally won't eat it unless my mom's the one who made it because it's so delicious and nothing else has ever come close. And the other one, it's called wara enab, the vine leaves. It's the stuffed vine leaves that you see in Lebanese restaurants, or if you are Lebanese, you obviously recognize what that was. And my mom makes it so well and literally nobody else comes close. So those are the two things. What about you, Scott?
Well, my dad does all the cooking, so it's always, it's homemade sauce. There is nothing better than the old family recipe, homemade pasta sauce on a Sunday. While the football game is on TV, fresh made bread, all of that, it is impossible to top. One more from Randy. How many kilometers is too much on your odometer?
I don't know. I haven't gotten there yet. I've had my car for 11 years and I just hit 100,000 kilometers. So it's not even miles.
Oh my God. I'm almost at 80,000 miles and I've had my car for 7 years. 6 years, something like that.
Well, yeah, but I commute to work and I'm actually quite proud of it because I do take care of my car, even though a lot of people think that I don't because there's a giant dent in the bumper. It's just, it's expensive and not worth it to fix, right? Like if it was the engine or whatever, I'd spend the money. But yeah, I take good care of my car. I'm very proud of the low mileage. And I'm hoping that this car will last me another like at least 5 years.
From at Jared Gibson, mailbag question, Sebastian Stan.
Mailbag answer, yes.
Yes. And finally, the nemesis question of the week. What's the best candle scent for each room in the house?
Okay. This is going to get like really intricate. Okay. So in the bedroom, cinnamon buns, that is absolutely the scent for that. In the bathroom, you need something minty because you need it to overpower. Like minty will like, you know, something like, or eucalyptus or something that's like strong enough to sort of, mask smells. And in the living room, in the kitchen, something lemony, obviously, again, to mask cooking smells. And in the living room, I like something like orange or clove based because that's a welcoming scent. Cinnamon is also a good one. Or, you know, the cranberry, like the Christmas cranberry cinnamony smell. I know exactly, like when I say Christmas candle, I know you can all picture that candle. So that's also the best one for the living room in the winter because it's a very welcoming smell.
The bathroom, I do agree. You need something strong to cover odors. in the kitchen, I love the smell of baked goods. So that's always a good one. I've learned in my room, I like one that has a little bit of like a foresty or oaky, a very, I don't want to say savory, but like a deep, rich scent that's kind of relaxing, like when you're hanging out. And the same kind of goes for the living room. I love a nice, a pine or a fir candle in the living room, especially around the holidays. And even then, sometimes you get one of those special ones, you know, like you said, the cranberry spice or like an apple spice one or something like that. But yeah, now I want to go buy candles because all I can think of is the drill tweet now, which is a huge problem.
It's a problem. Well, I started getting into essential oil diffusers because of that reason, because I was spending too much on candles. And all that did is now I spend too much money on essential oils. That smell like pine or clove or orange or eucalyptus and all the things I just mentioned.
Ay, ay, ay. She's going to take all of our podcasting paychecks and buy essential oils.
As if I haven't done that before.
I can't throw shade. I went to Lush and immediately spent way too much money this week. So I'm not one to throw shade.
And if you want us to keep spending money on the Lush or candles or essential oils or anything really, I have a story that I'm not going to tell on the podcast, but if you know me personally, please reach out and I'll tell you the story. Scott knows about it. Thank you so much for listening. So please keep listening so that we can keep our jobs and keep spending money on these frivolous things or even good causes. Sometimes we donate to charity, and you can do that by following this podcast wherever you get your podcasts. You can find us on Twitter at @LO_Canadians. You can email us at lockedoncanadians@gmail.com. And as you can see, sometimes you will spark an entire conversation just by one letter. And if you liked this podcast, then you should check out the NBA draft show. It is currently live as we are recording this, but you can catch the recap and NBA draft GOAT Chad Ford, Locked On NBA draft host Rafael Barlow, and Locked On NBA host John Corrales were live covering the NBA draft, and it's brought to you by Built Bar. You can follow Locked On NBA on YouTube and watch the live coverage recap because it was happening as we were speaking right now. Check it out. Thank you so much for listening. Go Habs, go. We'll talk to you Monday.